Welcome back to A Country First Conversation. Today we will talk to former Congressman Tom Rooney from Florida. Congressman Rooney served in the United States House of Representatives from 2009 to 2019, and he represented the great people of the 17th District of Florida. Remember to visit our website, countryfirst.com, and share our podcast with others. Thank you for joining.
All right, well, everybody, welcome back. Look, I got a really good friend with me on the podcast today. And so a couple of things we're going to talk a little about. The olden days and you know, the fun times, right? Because it's all been fun. But I got Tom Rooney. Tom, it's good to have you on board. Thanks for doing this. Let me jump right into this. So why did you, Tom Rooney, get involved in politics in the first place?
Oh, geez. I don't know why I got involved in politics. I mean, when I got out of the Army and, you know, I think, you know, when I was in college, I did an internship in Washington, D.C. for our Florida senator, this guy, Connie Mack, back in the day. And, you know, it's like all of your interns, like Sam there and anybody we had, you know, you sort of get the political bug, but then you go off and sort of like live your life. And but when I got out of the Army and, you know, had three kids at that point, our congressman, which, you know, we don't really need to go into too much detail. My congressman was Mark Foley, who got in trouble and had to leave. And so it's kind of like one of those carpe diem moments where it's like, now's the time. If you ever want to try to get to Washington as an elected official, there's an opening, and these openings very rarely happen. So, you know, man up. And yep. So I, you know, started running against two very established state politicians and worked my ass off and won.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, it's like, it's, I try to tell young people that when they're always like, how do you get involved? I go, look, it's first off, don't chase elected office, because you may never get there. And then you've like wasted, you know, your life. So chase what you love.
Right.
And but then when that moment opens up, don't be afraid of losing, you know. And
that's right. I always told my wife, like, and my family, like, there's a very good chance I'm going to lose and lose badly. But I want to see my name on the ballot. I want to be able to tell my kids that I tried to do something big in life. And, you know, if I lose, then I lose. But at least I tried. And so, you know, it ended up working out. I mean, there's a lot to be said for, you know, running for office. I always say to anybody that asks me advice, I'm like, run like you're running through a brick wall. And luckily my kids were so little that, you know, I didn't feel as guilty as I probably would later. But, you know, when you work that hard and run that hard and go to every event you can and shake people's hands, and you're, you know, as you know, being the younger guy definitely doesn't hurt, because I think, you know, even our older voters want to see somebody young with energy get in there and try to mix it up. So, yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah,
well,
you know, and I think it's gonna be, frankly, the younger generation's gonna have to save this place anyway, because they can get out of the old, you know, curmudgeon debates. Well, so here's a funny thing, Tom. You know this. I think you know this. So, like, you and I were friends for a couple years before I realized you were, you know, of the Rooney family, the Steelers. And and I remember you invited me once to a Steeler game, and I'm like, yeah, how'd you get tickets or whatever? And I don't even remember what you responded. But then it's like one day, 2 years later, it clicked.
I know a guy.
Yeah. And so, you know, for me, that was, I think that's why probably, you know, we were in the same thing together, and you know, we got to know each other from that level, and, you know, with no kind of preconceived notions. But the reason I bring all that up is, so I think you got in 08, you got in a couple years before me. I came in 2010. And so you've been here a while. You know, you were in politics for 10 years. You showed great leadership, I think, through some really tough times. But looking back, when we talk about what's happened with, like, Trumpism, for instance, do you see, this is the question I get asked all the time, and I'm curious what you think, is Trumpism the cause or the symptom of what we're seeing now, this kind of, you know, populist but kind of fact-free, I don't know, politics?
I ask myself that every day when I think about, because, you know, as you know, Donald Trump has, you know, talked about running for president or run for president, I think, since the 80s. I think it was always just sort of, and we always used to excuses like, oh, he's just trying to sort of like, you know, improve his business by getting his name ID out there. And then,
I think that's all he was doing.
And then I don't know if it was, I don't know what year, maybe when Obama won the first, I came in with Obama in 08, but maybe it was the second time, you know, and he started going off about the birth certificate and that, you know, so people started like nervously laughing, but then you're like, you know, that, where is the birth certificate or whatever?
Just asking and, questions.
Yeah. And then like, I've read a lot of stuff about, you know, like they talk about hillbilly elegies sort of being like, a reason why somebody like Trump could win, where, you know, people that may have worked in these mills back in the day and been able to not have a college education, but be able to retire with a good pension and a cabin up in the woods to go hunting. And now they see their grandchildren are working at, you know, fast food and they're on meth. And when Trump comes around, he says, I'm going to open these mills back up and I'm going to, you know, make America great again. To them, a lot of people think make America great again is a dog whistle for whether it be racism or whatever. For a lot of people, it was that the mills would open back up. And, you know, we just talked about Pittsburgh, like we're going to open these steel mills back up. You know, Pittsburgh's a healthcare town now. Those steel mills are gone. I mean, those are running trails now, but for a lot of people, that was a signal that a certain time and era in our country was going to come back. And, you know, my grandchild that's down playing video games on the couch, addicted to painkillers or something, is going to get his act together and get, you know, a job down at the mill that I worked at. And I think that, you know, so in that case, it's a symptom of, you know, I think a lot of turnover from us being a industrial country that, you know, made in America, turned over to a global community where you could go to Walmart and buy a TV for like next to nothing. But, you know, a lot of people of our parents and our grandparents' generation long for those times where, you know, what I was talking about before is a reality, and he just tapped into it. The problem that I have, Adam, as you know, is that I think that the messenger in Trump, that could have worked, I think, with a lot of different people. I know Buchanan sort of went there, Pat Buchanan, back a few years before, but for some reason, he was just able to connect with people of my parents' generation in a way that was, you know, I have these arguments. My parents just, you know, I was raised Catholic, go to church every Sunday, and he would say some stuff that would never be allowed to be discussed in my family. And you all know what those things are. And they would still make excuse for the guy. I'm just like, you know, you guys raised me differently than what this guy is preaching. And yet you give me crap when I, you know, question what he's doing. And so it's just been very, very confusing. And, you know, hey, my life and your life and a lot of people like us would be a lot easier if he made it easier without saying half the stuff that he said. I mean, we all want to still be on the team.
Mm-hmm.
It would
be easier too if we just like went along with it, right? I mean, and that's what I think you're seeing in so many members.
No,
just like just go along with it. It's
Adam,
easy.
People like us could never go along
with
this guy. I mean, I just don't. You know, there's some things that just, you know, You're brought up to be like, you know, I could use a lot of different words and I won't, but, you know, I think like shyster is a good word or something like sort of like that. But just I wouldn't. We always use this measure too. Like, who would you have a beer with? Who would you hang out with? It wouldn't be that guy.
Right.
I mean, ever. High school, college, army. What were you in, the Air Force or something?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the Army, but we try. Well, let me ask you too. Like, so you know, after January 6th. I think the Tampa Bay Times, they quoted you saying, I can tell you why I believe in the Second Amendment or the right to life, but why our party has gotten to a point that they're storming the U.S. Capitol, I can't answer that. So you live in Florida, right, and it's got, you know, pretty strong Trump roots. Would you say that, you know, where do you think a lot of this comes from? And do you think, whether it's your constituents or just people you see out there, as you know, do they prioritize right now a loyalty to Trump? Or is it to the party and its conservative values?
Oh, no, it's definitely to Trump. There, mm-hmm. You know, even my last election, which was in 18, it had switched. The people that worked for the Republican parties in each of my counties were less of the old guard of the, you know, Bob Dole, John McCain, George Bush, George H.W. Bush, to just complete allegiance to the guy, and mm-hmm. that was one of the reasons why I left, you know, aside from my kids getting to be of the high school football age. You know, it was a good time for me to leave, but that was just bizarre when it was like more of a loyalty pledge to a dude rather than to our ideology. But
And a dude so openly flawed. That's what I guess I can't get. Like if he was a guy that, you know, was, I don't know, you held him above board morally, but you can't argue with, you know, we all have moral shortcomings, but I mean, my goodness. And you know, now all of a sudden he's the, you know, sent by Jesus as the savior of the United States of America. I mean, it's been confusing.
Yeah, no, you're right. We all do have flaws, but I think that people like us recognize when we do, and we're not afraid to talk about that, as opposed to I'm perfect, and I will always be perfect, and nobody will be more perfect than me ever for the whole history of mankind. Mm. Like, that kind of talk is just like, what?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't know why people buy into that or think it's great, or a lot of my friends that I play golf with and hang out with think it's funny, but they still love him. Like, I don't know that he's supposed to be like the funny guy,
right?
But you know, with January 6th, I think was one of the most horrible moments in our history, and I know a lot of people disagree with that, but I think for us working in that building, you know, whenever somebody makes a joke, I'm like, you know what, we're gonna storm your law office or your doctor's office tomorrow and see how mm-hmm. you feel.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, you know, that's where people were elected, to do the work of the people of the United States, and to go in and do what they did there and to assault the police officers who are sworn to protect us. By the way, I just saw something like 20 Republicans voted against honoring the cops on the Hill that day. I mean, that's just unbelievable. Unbelievable.
So, let me ask you about that. So, you know, it was 21 Republicans that voted no. It was the congressional gold member or gold medal to those, you know, that were here protecting us, like Mike Fanone, who's kind of been the face of it. And, you know, this is the this is the Back the Blue Party, the Republican Party. So we don't condemn them. We didn't condemn those actions. Our leadership said nothing about the 21 Republicans that voted no. I mean, do we just now accept these kind of political stunts? Like, I'm going to vote no because, quite honestly, you know, now they're probably being praised on whatever the new, you know, crazy right Twitter is, you know, as because they're not calling it an insurrection or whatever it is. I mean, is this just the new normal? And or what?
Let's hope that those 21 are some kind of, you know, even when you all got elected, when I got elected in 08, we didn't have as much of that. We had like a handful. And then when the 2010 came in, and your class came in, we had probably more than a handful. But a lot of those members like yourself were great. Martha Roby and Kevin Yoder and people like that. But, you know, to say in 2021 or 2022 when you run that I'm not going to be able to use the fact in a primary that this guy voted against cops in some way to honor them, and that not be like a home run campaign issue, is just mind blowing. But
do you think? I just tweeted
to those guys because one of my staffers' husband is a Capitol Hill policeman, and after the riots, he sent me a badge from the Capitol Hill Police, and it was extremely emotional because I said some stuff in support of them. It was extremely emotional for me to get that, and I have that displayed prominently in my house. But those guys were overwhelmed and overrun. I mean, that's understandable, and maybe there was mistakes that their leadership made in understanding what that was going to be, and that's fine. But that's not anything wrong those rank and file guys did, right or wrong. I mean, those guys were fighting until the end to make sure that you guys were safe. And thankfully, no member was injured. And to come out and vote against them, I mean, that takes a lot of balls, especially the next time you're going to see those cops when you're walking to vote.
Yeah.
Of course, those cops will never say anything to them, but it'd be hard for me not to, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because a lot of them come up to me kind of quietly and tell me thanks for speaking out. And Michael Fanone, who was the D.C. Metro officer that was drugged down the stairs, tased, all that stuff. He's been kind of on the media, not really wanting to, but needs to. And he just says, and this guy was a Republican, and he goes, I just feel abandoned. I feel abandoned by city leadership. I feel abandoned by Congress. I feel abandoned by my party, and I don't blame him. I mean, it's, you say right. Back the blue, and then you have something so egregious that people that literally an hour after it happens are on the floor saying it's Antifa or it's BLM. And then now it's, the latest is it's the FBI that organized this. And then they vote against the January 6th commission is, to me, the most obvious, just put those three facts together and say these guys know the truth, but they are cowards. And they're not brave. They're not brave by voting, being one of 21 by voting no. They are cowards because they're scared to tell the truth, and they know damn well what the truth is.
Well, voting against the January 6th commission, I could see politically because they just wanted to go away, go away. And we don't want to talk about it ever again, which is the coward's way out. But to vote against those cops and commemorating them for what they did that day, that's different level stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. So I think you read Boehner's book.
I did. It was awesome.
Yeah, that's great. He talks about Jim Jordan as a political terrorist. He talks about the outgrowth of political opportunism and how this has become, the playbook for several members of Congress. What do you make of that? And can you maybe, you've seen what I've seen, can you talk about how you've seen that progression maybe a little bit?
Yeah, no, it definitely happened from, I really think that from when I got elected to when I left, there was this it was the explosion of the internet with social media. When I first got elected, I think we did Facebook, obviously, but that was it. And it was very much different. But, when social media, and I also, read Arthur Brooks' book, which I highly recommend as well, Love Your Enemies. And, he talks a lot about the money of outrage, the money of cable news and social media to get people to click on clickbait, on something that's going to make them outrage. And outrage is actually addictive.
Yeah.
It's like it releases this L-dopa in your brain where you have to see more. And so politicians that, may have been more below the radar are figuring out ways to get famous without being chairman of committees, without having any kind of seniority where, you have the one woman now who can't remember, I think her name's Green from Georgia, who literally said that their plane did not crash into the Pentagon on 9/11 that Sandy Hook didn't happen and that the Holocaust was like wearing the mask for Corona. And then, you know, at some point later she comes out and says, well, I was misinformed, you know, I'm sorry. It's just like, no, you don't get to just say you're misinformed. You're an idiot.
Yeah.
And so it's just sad to think that somebody like that could rise to the level because she knew enough to play into the game of social media with outrage and be like, you know what they're doing here and you know what they're doing there. And unfortunately, what's happened was when I got elected, there was a lot of what we call blue dog Democrats, which were conservative Democrats. There was a lot of Tuesday group Republicans, which were more moderate Republicans, mostly from the Northeast. A lot more. Like, now I don't think there's any. And so, you know, you had a lot of people that had a lot of relationships across the aisle and didn't see people as the enemy. Now what you have in Congress is you say this outrageous crap on social media about how this guy's a terrorist, that guy's the enemy. And then when you actually get elected and have to govern, there's no way you're going to come together
because
totally. You just got done calling people terrorists or
yep.
something.
Yep.
And so that and what Arthur Brooks says and what Boehner alludes to in his book is that what you end up having is just the pendulum swinging from Obama to Trump. And, you know, we're going from extreme to extreme to extreme, and nothing ever – I guarantee you, Adam, this infrastructure bill never happens.
Yeah.
Guaranteed. Like, we can't even do something as simple as that because there's no way people can afford to work across the aisle because on social media, they'll be betrayed as weak or, you know, whatever. So it's all about getting reelected, unfortunately. And to do that, you have to be from one extreme to the other. And
it's just like, what's
the way I was raised. And it's just that, you know, I just didn't feel like dealing with that anymore.
Yeah. And you gotta ask like what, okay, you get reelected. Great. Right. You know, Congress hasn't, I'm not complaining about this officially, but you know, Congress hasn't had a pay raise in 13 years. We make the same exact salary we did 13 years ago. You know, we don't get any of the perks people think we get. What is it that's so special about the job, you know, that you have to, you sell out what you believe? Is it the, you know, I think it's the identity, right? I think people, they, you know, to be identified as a member of Congress can, you know, it can be a rush in some circumstances, but that becomes the one thing you have to hold on to.
It is. I mean, the pin is sacred. And whereas when, you know, I think, you know, there's always going to be people like that are looking for fame. There was even a couple in my class. But, you know, I think by and large, you know, most people wanted to get elected because they wanted to make a difference and get something done. And then it became impossible to get anything done because we never had enough Republicans. The Democrats never have enough Democrats except for when they had enough to do Obamacare. And then most of those guys lost.
Yeah.
Because they did that because Pelosi didn't include any of us in that stuff. And so, you know, so what you're left with is either really rich people that can afford to just buy a seat, essentially, and they don't care that it's whatever, 140, whatever you're making, or it's people that are looking to go there and get famous quick and to do that so they can get themselves a TV show or, you know, I I'm sure, like in sports, you mentioned football. They're starting to pay people, athletes, for likes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sure that if we're not already doing it, we're not too far off from politicians getting paid for the amount of social media hits they're getting. So then it's going to be even more of a money game. And it's actually, instead of not to get anything done, to be like extremely rigid and resilient with regard to understanding that the president is a Democrat. It's a 50-50 Senate, and we're down like a handful of seats. We probably will get the House in 2022, but we're still not going to have the White House. And I don't know what's going to happen in the Senate, but
it ain't going to get better.
Yeah, I mean, you have to figure out how to work with the other side, but you can't do it if half of your people are being like, hell no, never, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Even something as stupid not, I shouldn't say stupid, but as easy as fixing roads and bridges.
Right.
Or, you know, I know that the courts have said, and, you know, as a Republican, I do believe primarily in states' rights, but there's nothing to say that the Congress couldn't come together and say that Election Day is a federal holiday.
Right.
Should the states decide to implement that is up to them. But, you know, that kind of thing makes voting easier. We don't do any of that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's impossible to get things done. And you get to a point in your life where you're like, I want to have some victories. I want to have some wins. And there's no winning in politics. There's only just like blowing stuff up or stalemates or, okay, now we have a vote to keep the government open and that's all we're going to do.
Yeah. So let me ask you how, you know, I mean, obviously I know you believe what I believe, which is, you know, we'll find a way through this. America's, it endures, it'll survive. I think we can't take that for granted. Like, I think probably I used to, and like a lot of people still do when they can, you know, lie to their constituents and think it's okay. Like, I think you're doing real damage. But so if you had to, I'll kind of combine kind of two thoughts I have. So, you know, you're the father of three boys. So given your experience, given the political environment, what is, if your son came to you and said, I want to run for office, what would you say? And then what advice would you give to like how you can come out and make this basically a country first place instead of a fame first place?
Yeah. I guess my initial reaction is to do something else, which yep. is terrible to say. But if he did really want to run, I would work my ass off to help him win. In the maybe naive Adam, and I think you have this problem too, hope that things are going to get better someday. Mm-hmm. And I hope that I'm there when things get better and things are going to turn around. I even just saw this poll yesterday, I think, that showed that our governor in Florida is for the first time outpolling Trump as far as who people see as the leader of our party. And, you know, whether you like Ron DeSantis or not, at the very least, I think it's an indication that the Republican Party may be moving on.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we can move on, if we can first stop being the party of Trump and become an ideological Republican conservative party again, primarily, then I think that we can address with good leadership in Congress, you know, people that are actually helpful in lawmaking again.
Yeah.
As opposed to leadership that's scared of those guys and, you know, when they hear that the Holocaust is the same as wearing a mask and not saying anything
it's
about
incredible.
It.
Incredible.
Or, you know, that we're not going to do anything about infrastructure because we're not getting everything we want, even though we're not in power. I do have this unfortunate eternal hope that things are going to get better. And so if he wanted to run for office, I would help him do that. But I don't know. I don't know what you do about social media and what you do about getting likes and getting hits and clickbaiting and getting people outraged enough so that they keep watching you. And so you can be this cartoon character on TV and YouTube and everything else, rather than just going to Washington to accomplish goals for your constituents.
And it's going to take, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No,
I was just going to say, I had a few accomplishments that I'm very proud of, but, you know, I just don't know. I don't know, you know, what's getting accomplished in Washington. I've actually sort of turned you guys off just because
good, smart.
It was making me depressed. So anyway,
well, I
now
think
I'm coaching JV football.
Yeah, that sounds good. I think part of it is, man, I think people have got to just wake up and demand better. And, you know, I thought January 6th was that. I hope it's not something worse. That's what has to happen. That's what Country First is trying to do, is wake people up to that. And so, look, we're coming up on time, but, you know, as well as coaching JV soccer, I actually found out that you had a cameo role in Walt Before Mickey. You were playing a farmer. Is that true?
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, tell us all about that, Tom. You were a farmer.
All about that. You know, you just talking about it for the 3 seconds there was about as long as I've been that movie.
Did you have, like, coveralls and stuff? Did you look like a farmer?
I was brushing a horse's mane down or something. But,
and I was in
that movie with the guy from Napoleon Dynamite, who I love, but he was actually playing a serious character in this movie, and I was like, a little disappointed.
I also can confirm that I have heard your singing talents, and what was it, your high school band, when you did you kept one night playing over and over your vocals solo or whatever, which was just you going like, yeah, or something like that. What was the name?
That was a great song.
Yeah, dude. I was trying to look it up, but I don't remember it.
Yeah, it's not on anything. It's only on my mixtape, so I'll make you listen to it again when I see you.
Yeah, that sounds good. Well, hey, listen, Tom, thanks for, thanks for being my friend. Thanks for serving when you did. It was an important time, and really appreciate you being with us today. Thanks a lot.
All right, man. I'm waiting for your next step. I'm excited. You're the answer, Kinzinger.
I'll count you in, Rooney.
All right.
All right. Take care, my friend. Thank you.
Thanks.
This has been a Country First Conversation with Adam Kinzinger and our guest, Tom Rooney. The Country First team wants to hear from you. Please be sure to share in the comments or send us a note at info@countryfirst.com to share your thoughts and feedback. And be sure to visit countryfirst.com for other podcast conversations and subscribe to receive all the latest updates. Thank you again for joining us. This is Greg Reidenauer, and we'll see you next time as we put country over party.